してね。Narrator Della Hayward and interviewer Holly Winkleman on 10/17/05. And what are we going to talk about? I wanted to ask you how you came to come to this program and why you think it's important to come and talk to students.
There's a lot of young people like you that really don't know what went on a long time ago when we were in your age. There's a lot of changes that have come along, particularly in the when prejudice was real bad back in the 60s, 50s, you know, that time period. And it was felt in every sector of the economy, the government, things like that, you know. We couldn't really participate, you know, kind of locked in or locked out of the modern culture in many ways. Although a lot of us broke through, you know, but it had to take a special effort, extra effort to try to do that. Nowadays it's not that way. Everything's open now, more or less. And it's getting better all the time. So if you get a history of what your, you know, would be my grandparents and my dad's generation and then my generation, what they went through, you could see the progression of this breaking down of this prejudice that used to be held against us. And the other thing is, we need to get, the reason I came to this is to try to convey to you guys that things are getting better. They are getting better. There's a lot of improvements. There's a lot of, lot more opportunity than when you were, for instance, the highest level of education that I could have gone through was high school. Maybe technical school. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go to college. It wasn't an option because the programs weren't there like they are today. Now you can go to any level now. You know, it's up to you as an individual. How far you want to go? And that's the only level now. You have really no excuse to go any higher because there's a lot of programs that are, you know, especially among the natives, that are government sponsored. You don't have to pay for it. So if you don't take advantage of it, then, you know.
You just have to find what's out there.
Yeah, you have to dig around, sure.
Go for it.
But then the reason I come here is mainly to encourage you guys to keep going. Don't stop. You know, make your education your priority right now and stay with it. That's why I'm here. That's why I want to talk to young people.
What do you think about learning about culture in like the university setting?
I think it's good. I think it's good. We got to know where we come from.
Yeah.
And so much of it, so even in our generation, we were lost. You know, because our culture was in many ways banned. You know, our language, things like that. And we need to know. We need to go back and see. You know, like what you're doing now, talking to us older people about that. And it's important to know where you come from. If you don't, you know, it's like you're building on a very shaky foundation. You don't know your culture. It's going to be difficult later on. That's perhaps the main reason I think about it. Because my culture, you know, I told you many times, it was taken away. And until, you know, when that happened, we didn't know what to do. We were just aimlessly, you know, trying to fit in. We couldn't fit into the modern culture. So there was a lot of non-acceptance. Then we tried to go back to the culture which was taken away by the missionaries in many cases. And the school system, like I say, banned the use of the languages in the school system. You know, so there was many things that were saying the culture's not, we can't do that. But now they realize, hey, we should have not done that. There's a lot of people in the education system said, now they want to turn around and then help us bring it back, which is good. You know, and the other thing is the self-esteem of you as a native, when you're being told that your culture is not acceptable, you know, what do you think about yourself? What do you think about your confidence in yourself? You know, it's detrimental to those two things. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to shy away. You're not going to push, go after your goals. And that's, to me, what it looks like happened in a lot of men. And there's a lot of people that overcome that, you know, but there's few by comparison to other cultures. Like with the white culture, they just go, you know, they're not afraid to take chances, they're not afraid to step forward, you know, and things like that. But we kind of stand back because we're afraid of the modern culture, you know, in many ways, because we never lived that way as kids, as we grew up. In my case, my personal case, I did. It was actually the reverse. I was exposed to the modern culture before I was exposed to my native culture, because, like I said, mine was taken away. My native culture was taken away. Language, everything. I never learned our language. I never learned our ways, the old ways. Where I participated in any kind of cultural at all is after I married my second wife. She was, you know, they practice their culture of prayer, the Athabascan people. But still, it's fractured. It's fragmented. It's not, you know, bits and pieces here and there. And they can't explain in many cases why they do things the way they do. I see a lot of people in my generation, you know, my age group, when I talk to them, I ask them, why did they do this? And the common answer is, I don't know. It's just done that way. And you'll see that among, like, my generation. And in many cases older, like going back even to my grandparents, you'll see that. But a lot of these things aren't known by the young people of today. You know, I'm talking like 35, even 40-year-olds. You know, they don't understand it. What's going on, because the majority of them nowadays are they got their main foot in the modern culture, and they had some experience as young people growing up with their parents and grandparents. That was all in the well, you know, native culture, and that's where it ends. It pretty much stays there. So they don't learn much after that. But you guys, the way you're going about it, I like, is that you're interviewing us from the older and trying to bridge that gap between your generation and, say, my generation, my grandparents' generation, parents' generation. We need to know that. There's a lot of suffering went on because of the prejudice among the native people. And so we kind of shrunk back and said, I don't want to participate in the modern culture. There were just a few.
It was like either one way or the other.
Yeah, and then, there was, and you'll see it, I met a lot of kids when I was in high school, grade school, because they come out of the village right into the modern culture. There's a multicultural shock. They don't know how to react. They don't know how to respond when they get in. I was fortunate in that I grew up that way. I was right in the middle of the stream of commerce down in the southeast, right on Ketchikan, Juneau, and those places like that, and Sitka. We more or less grew up right in the middle of the malt. We had really no choice. So that's where our growing up years for a lot of us down there came from, in the modern culture. But as you go further, say above the Yukon River, or even say Fairbanks, the dividing line, you go up into those outlying villages, most of them, the majority of them, live that native culture. Very few, break into the, come to Fairbanks, come to Anchorage, break into maybe later on in life, but they're several steps behind in the modern culture when they do. So they have a difficult time. I think this is what brought on a lot of our social problems that we have today. You look at our generation, our parents and grandparents' generation, up to the 40, 50-year-olds, and then you're seeing, we have a lot of social problems in the area of drugs and alcohol and things like that, that's all they can do. A lot of them thought that's all they can do. Never went any further. But when you see that, going back in history like that and look at the generations as you come to your present generation, that'll give you a good perspective of what did my grandparents go through, what did my parents go through, and all that. Because a lot of that isn't discussed today. Because there's that low self-esteem, low confidence, and so they're not going to even talk about it, because they're afraid to talk about it. Because a lot of their lives, that's the way it was, is their language and their culture was banned in schools, to be used in schools. Not today. We're studying it now, right? That's how far we've gone now in overcoming a lot of these prejudices, ways. And it's good. We're advancing, We're going in a positive direction. We're going in the right direction. It's going to take a lot of years yet. I could say with confidence that from my childhood life up to my senior life now, I've seen a lot of that positive move. And you as young people have to feel that and know it. There's really no excuse now for kids nowadays to go on to higher education. The funding's there.
I did all my money for school through the Native Corporation, through Siri.
Now, when that came along, that is another money source that came along to help the younger people, was the Native Corporations. There's some corporations that are strong, Doyon and Sea Alaska, probably the two dominant ones right now. But then there was others, you know, that didn't meet with that much success, but they're doing all right. They're growing. They're still, they're moving up. But when they see other corporations move up, you know, like the leading ones, like Doyon and Sea Alaska, those others will move up. There were some that were just, you know, when they had that Native Claim Settlement Act back in '72, I think, and that was finally passed by Congress, and then we were dealing with it. There were so many of us that didn't, what's going to happen now? We didn't know. There was just a lot of questions yet to be answered. You know, we didn't have the manpower among our Native group, you know, that can handle any of these things.
How do you run a corporation?
Yeah, that, all that kind of stuff running, you know, who's going to run all this stuff? And it has to come from our people. So there's a big rush to try to educate people. They had on-the-job training, you know, when it first came along, and then, gee, we were pushed in so many different directions. You can't join here because you don't have any jobs. A lot of unanswered questions, you know. So it was really a frustrating time, and we're trying just trying to get on the qualification list. And, you know, so that all had been worked out. When it did, now we're on a better footing now. We're just, the Native people are just starting to get their position in the modern culture now. And that's something that has to be done, it has to be done. You know, we're still behind, you know, we're catching up, we're closing the gap, and yet we still have a lot to do to catch up. Education. It's paramount. That's the main reason I'm here. You progress in the educational field. Even after you graduate and get your degree, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop there. It keeps going. You know, and as you build your knowledge base up, a lot of fears that you had, even in the beginning of your school year, they're going to melt away. As you expand your knowledge base, and then you're going to be more apt to progress and succeed with your confidence, self-esteem, also growing along with that. Because knowledge dispels fear. The more knowledge you have, the less fear of anything or whatever it is you're fearful of.
I definitely feel more capable since I've been here. I was, in the beginning, I was a little really shy. Like, I'd be going, like, I'm in the art department, so I'm, like, going into the studio and stuff like that. Like, but I didn't know the tools or something very well, and so I wouldn't even want to go in there and figure it out. And now I have some stuff figured out, so I just go in there and, you know, realize that everybody around me is in the same boat as I am, or at least like somewhere along the line of either they just got there or they're, you know, they figured everything out, but they know what it was like when they just got there.
Those kind of things in life, you know, I was in that boat. I was really a shy kid when I was small. You know, in grade school and even in high school, I fall apart and I just have to stand up in front of people and talk, you know, or even be among people, you know. And it took a long time for you know, to get over that. But like I said, when you build up your knowledge base, that's going to dispel a lot of that. The more you learn, the stronger confidence and stronger, everything about it. It's, you're going to get stronger, and you're not going to be afraid to talk to people. That was a big barrier for me. Just introducing yourself was a big problem, you know, because I didn't know, you know, I had no confidence in myself. And those kind of things you have to overcome, you know, when you're going to say, okay, I'm going to take my place in life. And you have to go for it. If you're not confident, you're not going to go for it. You're going to try to back off. You should be just going. And that's the kind of problem that I'm talking about that are the result of bad social problems. The other thing is, too, if you keep on going to school, continue on, and perfect your skills that you're learning here in school. You know, you hone those skills, you know, with experience and that failure of choice. And that's going to also, you know, alleviate a lot of fears that you have about yourself in that field. The hardship is going to be, the big hurdle is going to be when you first get out of school and you get your first job. Scary. I remember that. Remember I told you about the Gilmer Creek, where I got my major job after tech school. I didn't know, you have nothing to gauge against. You know you're there, and you said, only thing I got to rely on is what I learned at school. And that's very helpful. It's got your foot in the door, right? That's what's going to happen when you get your degree. That's what that does. It introduces you to your potential employer and gets your foot in the door for the interview. Without that, you're not even going to get looked at. So that's why that education is so important. That degree is so important.
Yeah, and a lot of people think of it as just a piece of paper, or you know, you go through the motions of going to school just so you can be done with it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It's an important document. And it's gonna, you know, even though it's knowledge, you know, everything that went into that piece of paper, you know, it was knowledge gained that you had to go through to learn, you know, to get that piece of paper. And that's what the employer is looking for. Are you knowledgeable in this field that I hired you for?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to put you on probation for a month or two to see, to prove. You have to prove to them that, I got the background, I got the knowledge, I got the education. Mm-hmm. And so you're gonna tightrope there to walk for a while. So they monitor you. That's the way the job industry works. If you don't pan out, they'll drop you. It's normally how the hiring process works. All those things you're going to have to learn.
Yeah, I've been thinking more and more about like the process of going through school and like trying to get as much out of it as I can, because at first I was just thinking, you know, it's just a piece of paper, it doesn't really, you know, mean all that much, but a piece of paper so you can go and show somebody, you know, to get your job, but it's practice, at least, for the real world,
Okay, as you go out on the job, you keep your resume up to date, with all that experience that you're developing on the job, it's going to go on the resume. It should go on that resume. So say, keep working on it. Keep it on. Keep it up to date. So if you do get laid off, or say the company goes out of business, or for whatever reason, or you choose to move on personally or yourself, you got that resume up to date, and when you go bring it to the next employer, he says, oh, you got this degree plus all these years of experience on this piece of paper, and it's just no bigger, no more than this, one or two pages, that's all. You know, the caption, all of what you've done up to that point. And that's all the employer's interested in, because he hasn't got the time to look through a detailed record of your past. Education, experience. It's just a caption, just a short picture of what you've accomplished up to that period, to that time. And that's all he's going to look at. Oh, okay, cool. I'll sit down. You're hired. Sometimes it happens that easy. And you'll be, with it's expected, description of the job. All what it entails. Thing is, just stay with the guidelines, do whatever the supervisors or people that are in charge tell you to do. Like you say, you're going to be on probation for a while. Usually about a month. I know when I first got that job out where I worked at, I said, oh, I'll work for 18 months here. Gee, they paid so well that, once he turned the union, the pay scale went up by leaps and bounds. Couldn't turn away. But the job, I was fortunate in another aspect that I enjoyed that job, and that's another point. If you don't like your job, you're not going to be happy there. Even if you work there, you're not going to do what's expected of you. You're just going to do whatever you can get by with.
Minimum requirements.
Yeah, right. So if you don't enjoy the job and put a little extra effort into it, stuff like that, that's what the employers look at when they evaluate your employment time with them. Shows enthusiasm, and you like your job, and you like the people you work with, and get along and all. Those raises will come more frequently.
Yeah, I kind of chose my major just by doing whichever classes I thought I could be in and, go through it and like it, and it was just kind of whatever class I wanted to take. I took all the requirements along in the beginning. I took the required classes and then kind of took a couple extra classes that were just fun or something I just thought maybe I'd be interested in. I took psychology classes in the beginning just for fun and kind of liked it. Just thought maybe I'd go for that. But I started taking art classes and I was like, I have to take an art class every semester. Then it was half my classes were there, so I was okay. Might as well go for it. If that's going to be something I can stand and do and be able to get a job or whatever afterwards, actually stick with it and not get my degree and then go for something totally different when I actually go and get a job or whatever.
When you look at the expense of going to having an education, you think it's a lot of money now. It is. It's a lot of money. Whoever pays for it is putting out. In general, you could say on the average, a degree, 4-year degree, it's going to run $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And say you do that, say it takes 4 years. And, you know, you think, you know, like I got a son that's going to school, and I'm going to have to help him pay for it. And I'm using my credit rating, you know, to help him get these loans and stuff like that. But if I have to pay $40,000, $50,000, you know, fine, you know, that's great, because what's going to happen? He likes that feeling, and I have the feeling he does. He's taking up being a chef. And he's right at the tail end of his course now. I mean, he's finished. And I had to tell him, you know, keep going. He said, I have to get these loans. I don't know, these loans all the time. I said, well, keep going, because someday it's gonna turn around the other way, because now you're gonna start making money to be able to pay them off. All I'm doing is let him use my credit rating so that he can borrow these big amounts of money. But when you look at your career in that field, say you do it for 30 years, you pay that $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 times many, many, many times over. Look at that back up, many, many times over. The average, say if you make $50,000, $60,000 a year, mm-hmm. in your chosen career field, and you work at it for 20 years, what does that figure out there? That's a lot of money.
Well worth it.
Yeah. So the year that it seemed like a long time you're spending in this educational process, but you complete that, you virtually can say, I got this money in my hip pocket now. Get your degree and go out. The other thing is, there's an old adage, or old saying, that you've accomplished what a lot of us older people really know, is that you learn how to take care of yourself before you're going to learn how to take care of other people, like you get married, your husband, your kids. That's the way to do it. That'll make having a family like that later on a lot easier. You can just about weather any kind of financial problems you run into once you've completed that. You got to get your degree. The thing of it is, too, that it's almost a requirement, just like when we were kids, you know, high school was enough. They told us, you got to get a high school education. You know, you won't get the best job, but you'll get a job. But if you get your degree, now you got wide choices of jobs that open up to you. Then in fact there's gonna reach a point where people are gonna start coming after you. Want you to work for them. Try to entice you away from an old employee and say, I'll pay you another $10,000 a year if you move over to us. You know, that kind of thing. That's what happened to me while I was in school. insurance companies
start
coming.
Start to get to the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. I just, in the last month of that course I took, there was companies coming in, interviewing us to try to get us out in their field before we graduated. But we said, no, I'm going to graduate.
And you stuck with them after that.
Huh?
You stuck with them.
Right, now. Well, I think when I was in my last term there, we had about 5 or 6 employers come in interviewing us. That's not saying it's going to happen to you. You know, we were just in the right place at the right time, you know, because there was a high demand for people in the electronic field at that time. The space program was on. There was a lot of major corporations that were in the space program and building the construction of space equipment that were hiring. So it just burst into the scene, you know, about the time we graduated.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just kind of have to, like, get to know people, put myself out there before I graduate, and try to get involved as much as I can while I'm going to school, so it's not all of a sudden I want to start doing stuff after I graduate. But everybody's like, who are you? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's, you know, like I said, it's minimum requirement now, just a associate's degree to get into anything. You know, they're saying. The big paying jobs are way up there now.
Yeah, I don't think I'm like, well, after I did my full year, even though this is my 5th year.
You're close to the end, aren't you?
Yeah, I think next year I'll graduate.
Yeah.
I've had a long, like in the beginning I was kind of not sure, so I took like couple of classes a semester. It was kind of like, oh, I don't know about this college thing. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what my major is. First year, I just took 2 classes a semester. And I realized that it was just as easy as high school. I could keep going. And, even easier because you had a lot more choices. Do what you were actually interested in, and you're doing it for yourself, not, you know, because it was required. But yeah, another 6-year program. That's, I guess, not very much time in the long run. I guess it probably gets harder and harder if you put it off.
I've known people that have done that and did well. I've had friends that just, you know, they take a class here, take a class there, and then half a year back. And the entire year that I worked, there's one lady that is now one of the leaders in the AFN. Her name is Dorothy Larson. All the time, her husband and I worked together out there for years and years. And she never really could. In fact, there was 2 of them out there that did that. You know, they'd take a class, and they, you know, because they're raising a family, and they couldn't continue on for one reason or another. And then in another year or 2 down the road, they'd continue on, you know. Eventually, over 15, 20 years, they ended up with a degree. You know, and they're, by that time, they're 50 years old or older. And they did all right. They did good. And Dorothy Larson held a high position in the AFN. knowledge is something, you know, just the energy. It's there. It never loses its strength. When you gain it or acquire it, it's always going to be there. It's a part of you. It's from your time and effort up there. It can neither be created or destroyed. That's the way electricity is. Energy on it. It just changes form. Now, I'm going to say another thing that, say, you started out in the field, and all halfway through or almost to the end of the course, you decide, hey, this is really what I didn't want to do. Oh, I know. You found out there was something more to your liking. You know, pretty much the same field, but yet not exactly. I mean, you were in a course that wasn't really exactly what you really wanted. You found something else. Late, you know, halfway to near the end of your course, there was more to your liking. And you're afraid to switch because you feel like you're going to start all over again. But in essence, what happens, that's what you learn in that course that you're taking. It's going to help you in this other field if you chose to switch, even a completely different field. Because a lot of those things are that you're taking in the first course, it's going to help you. In fact, it's going to broaden your knowledge base even further. It's going to point out a lot of things that it's going to help you understand the new field. So it's just like I say, the knowledge is not lost. It stays with you. It's like all that stuff you learned in like grade school, junior high, and high school. That all stays with you till you die. They're all just mental tools.
Hi, this is Holly Winkleman. Whoops. And I'm talking with Edith Nagkiak.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, you're from Barrow. Were you born in Barrow?
I was born in Cockton. By plane, it's about a couple of hours from Barrow. And in 1956, our dad built a house in Barrow, closer to the hospital. Where there's doctors.
Mm.
And so in 1956 he moved the whole family to Barrow, and I was raised there my whole life. I mean, I was about 8 years old.
When you moved to Barrow?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember much about Bartolik? Or just things that your parents would tell you that happened and stuff like that.
I know my ancestors, family. My mom is in Akuchuk, and they called him Chief at that time. He was a leader in our village in Kaktoli, my grandfather, Andrew Akuchuk. We had 10 children. Actually, 11, I think, yeah. Dorcas passed away. Benjamin, the youngest one, passed away. So my mother's the oldest one. And all 9 of them grew old together. My mom, from the oldest to the youngest.
They all stayed in Catholic?
All of them stayed in Catholic. That's all my cousins. Seems like the whole village is my relative.
Yeah.
I remember growing up with them, and it was such a beautiful, when I think about it, very close. We played together. There was always activities for us, and I loved school, going to school. The late Dr. Harold Kaviluk was a Uyghur teacher then, and we really couldn't understand because we were all, we didn't know English whatsoever. We grew up with our mother language, the Inupiaq language. So coming into class, we were very fortunate to have an Inupiaq teacher at that time. Because when we couldn't understand, he taught us in our mother language, the Inupiaq language, and we go, oh, okay, we understood. And he was such an excellent role model. For me, till the day he died, he was such a good, he always said to each and every one of us, I think, that he's so proud of us, and he really uplifted our self-esteem. And I think that's what we do to young people nowadays, because our family was very close-knit, and we respected each other and our uncles. We learned from our uncles, we learned from our aunts. They took care of us. We were like, when mom and dad were gone somewhere, there was always somebody there with us. An uncle. I remember being over at my uncle Perry before his wife died, Maggie. And I was very small. And I remember he took us out camping. Very beautiful April, beautiful starting spring light, and there's snow around, and I remember him feeding a squirrel. It's just like veal. Squirrel is like, we ate that and ptarmigans and caribou and before a white man came, our mom taught us the things that they used to catch birds or to how to hunt seals, because our mom grew up with our dad and he was a hunter. I mean, with our grandfather. Our grandfather was a hunter. That's how we survived. That's how he provided for the family. He'd go out seal hunting or caribou hunting. And of course, the oldest one has to know about all this. And our mom, she was a sharpshooter. Till the day she died, she was a sharpshooter. And I remember asking her about how what you did, what you learned. And she said, I remember when I was 6 years old, I learned how to make biscuits. I said, wow, 6 years old. And to this day, after she passed away, I automatically picked it up. Commercial break. We'll be right back. We're having chicken soup right now. That's what we grew up with. You know, like caribou soup and sheep. There was a lot of sheep that they hunted. Oh man, that's really good too. Sheep and there's a story about the pilot bread crackers. They didn't know what they were. You know what they use them for? Frisbees. They played around. So, anyway, back to my family. I love my uncles and aunts, and I grew up with them, and like I said, mom and them grew old together. So I never really got to know our grandparents, but I knew when our grandmother died. I think I was 2 years old. I'm not sure. 5 years old. Because she died around 51. And our grandfather was a prominent hunter, and I remember him coming into the house with his attire, hunting, white hunting parka, the whole works, and he come in and everybody started crying. I think that's when I was black too or whatever. Like when I was growing up, there's some bits and pieces of, you know, what I remember. What I remembered about Croctolis was dog teams. We never had ski-doos. We never had ski-doos, and it used to snow a lot. Hardly any snow anymore. In those days, you couldn't even, you could only see the chimney from the village, and I remember sliding, and right during recess we would go out and slide, and there was a lot of snow that time. And our dog team had a house because of that. I remember having a house for the dogs, a big house. I think they found it from, they used to salvage old houses then.
Yeah. Were they like, almost like pets, or more like just a dog team? They had their own space and...
They were our means of transportation to go hunting. To go up inland to go get caribou, down to the ocean to get seals, ugulukes, whatever. They were our means of transportation. Getting up there and camping and just those days, it was just so wonderful. No worries. There was no alcohol whatsoever. We never knew alcohol or domestic violence or anything like that when we were growing up. It was all in harmony. Everybody worked together, respected each other and respected the land and the animals, and they shared. And our grandfather evidently took in somebody, and I'm a namesake, Rakliaksa. She was a poor lady who didn't have any relatives to take care of her. So he brought him into the family, and she raised George, Uncle George. She raised him. He considered her like a mother, a second mother. So we pretty much, I guess, even before white man came into our culture, we lived in harmony, I think that was the essence of the spiritual essence of our culture. Before ministers came, we abided by God wanted us to live that way. And later on we found out it was, oh, okay, it's written. We lived it, you know, sharing, taking care of the poor and respecting each other. And it was pretty much how we lived. And then the missionaries came and taught our people. Our grandfather was one of the first lay preachers. He, their parents, I mean, his mom, I think, passed away. When their parents passed away, the oldest one decided to send him to Barrow so that he could go to school. He was one of the first people to ever go to school, because before him, they didn't have that luxury, the opportunity to be educated. And so he learned the English language, and he pretty much translated the Bible. When he was alive, he would walk to the camps and preach and read from the Bible, because he was the only one that could translate from English to India. He was one of the first people ever to do that. And so that's where the gumption, I guess, that we just love to learn. I loved school, and there's two reverends in our family. James is one of the oldest from the second wife. Our dad had a first wife, but when there was an epidemic, she passed away, leaving Martha, our sister, our older sister, Martha Aiken, and Raymond. So Raymond was adopted out, and that's when he met our mom. Actually, mom was taking care of her best friend, Bernice, Martha Abimwarak, that's her mother. And before she died, she said, please take care of my husband. And being best friends. She acknowledged that. And I know for a fact that our parents had a very good, healthy relationship. They laughed together, they cried together, it's just like a typical relationship we have. And one of the things that we have learned is that you don't argue in front of the kids, you know. You don't, and our dad was a child advocate. He taught us how to treat children. I remember we were trying to get our nephew from the bottle. He was like 2 years old, I think, trying to get him out of the bottle and putting pepper in his bottle. And boy, we really, he said, "You do not do that to a child. He's growing and his bones are still growing. He needs that milk." And that was the end of it. Our dad was just a wonderful role model for all of us. He taught us honesty and not to steal. And that's how pretty much we grew up, and that's why we're really bad in politics. We're honest. Nobody, I mean, I'm sorry, but sometimes politics can get kind of, I don't know. I don't want to get into that. My family. Sorry.
That's a whole other
subject. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the memories of Cocktail before I was born. I was born in a fishing town. And I'm still trying to figure out, because I asked my uncle who was there when I was born. And he said, when there were babies being born, our grandmother was always there, and who did he mention? Dorothy? Dorothy Gordon was always there. So ladies that know how to do that, common sense it was. Long time ago they didn't have hospitals or doctors, so it was natural for them to have babies in the tent, anywhere they were out camping. And so I was born in a fishing camp 5 miles away from Cactoli. So I asked my uncle. They have no specific